Hi, my name is J. Lauren Sangster, and welcome to my podcast, Flying Over the Hedge. The name of the podcast is a reference to my newly released book, titled The Girl Who Flew Over the Honeysuckle Hedge, Her Lifelong Journey of Coping and Healing with CPTSD, or Complex Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. I am that girl. In my book, I discuss various traumas, beginning at an early age. I also discuss various coping and healing methods I have used as I navigate life, to include humor and music. Today I'm going to discuss both traditional and non-traditional methods to heal with post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, or complex PTSD. I write in my book about the many ways I coped after trauma events and how some of the things I did from an early age helped me and some things hurt me, even though I was completely unaware at the time. When we experience trauma, whether it's little t trauma or big T trauma, and you can learn the difference between the two in my first podcast, we develop our individual unique methods to cope through tough moments, even flashback moments. I invite my listeners, particularly anyone with PTSD or CPTSD, to think about your unique coping and healing methods as I discuss mine. Maybe we use similar methods, or perhaps I might turn you on to new ways of coping and/or healing. I hope so. Also, before I begin, I want to mention that joining me later in the podcast will be my acupuncturist, Donald Charlson. Don will discuss how acupuncture may help with PTSD and CPTSD symptoms. So here are a few coping methods I've used throughout my lifetime. My father was a musician and a singer. He had his own band and they played almost every weekend. So I grew up with music. I mentioned quite a few songs in my book because certain songs have resonated with me over the years. They've provided me understanding that the person who wrote the lyrics at least understood certain moments in my life, so I didn't feel alone with my situation. I imagine most of us have a song or more that truly resonates with particular moments in our lives. I guess I've always loved what today we term dad jokes. I'm not sure why they began to be called that, but I love these head in the palm of the hand, it's so silly jokes. We sometimes use humor when we feel uncomfortable. It buffers moments of crisis, trauma, or even social situations where we feel out of place or at risk. So it gives us a minute to detach from the situation and allows us to feel more in control. Humor can reduce stress by lowering cortisol, a hormone in our body that plays a role in our body's response to stress, and release endorphins, a natural hormone that can alleviate pain and lower stress and can improve our mood and enhance a sense of well-being. We release endorphins when we do pleasurable activities like exercise. Some of you may have heard of a runner's high that kicks in after enough endorphins have been released. Eating can release endorphins for some people, even having sex, and that's a fun way to move. So this is a little sad, but I have a perfect example of using humor to step away from a painful situation. My partner John's cat, Sookie, and I consider her mine now that John and I are together, was unwell. She was an indoor-outdoor cat over 14 years old. We'd been told, based on various ailments, it was time to let her go. We stopped providing her with a medicine to increase her appetite when we saw she wasn't eating, and this was something we'd been doing for well over a year to keep her weight up as she battled her ailments. So we spoke with John's parents to tell them about the situation with Sookie. When we spoke with them, Sookie was on day 3 of not eating. John's father is 95. His mother is 90. Bless them. They are remarkable people, still active, and they both have a great sense of humor. And we laugh a lot with them. John's father loves pie. He was just finishing eating a piece of pie when we were telling them about Sookie. John mentioned that we were choosing to have someone come to the house to assist Sookie on her last day. By this, I mean to euthanize her. John said we'd been given the business card for the person we would schedule to come to the house. John's mother asked about the card. His father immediately said something to the effect of, "Don't give your mother any ideas," meaning she might want to call them to come assist me. John told his dad to keep eating your pie, of course meaning don't let mom not see you eating like we were seeing Sookie not eating. We all had a really good laugh about this. Okay, so what happened there? We had a lighthearted moment. We were talking about Sookie being older and, well, dying. We know John's father is getting up there, okay? We acknowledge he's already up there. He made a joke, and then John did. We all laughed. We used humor to ward off the uncomfortable feelings surrounding the discussion of death. Sharing this funny moment allowed us to bond and reduce feelings of isolation without talking about things too much. This was a good coping use of humor. And I want to say here, rest in peace, little Sookie. You are so missed, little girl. Sadly, we're often conditioned to not confront or express our feelings authentically, and we sometimes do this by using too much humor. I know some of you might be thinking, what's wrong with joking? It makes people laugh. But like I said, humor gives us a barrier, meaning we put up a wall around our feelings so we're less emotionally engaged. The more joking, the more the wall stays up, and the less engaged we are in the real feelings, the real conversation. So it's important to pay attention to our jokes and how we're feeling inside when we use humor. What I mean is, don't lose sight of the pain you're running from by using too much humor. I had a desire for the word perfect. I couldn't control the chaos happening around me or to me, so I wanted the feeling of a controlled environment. I wanted my room to be neat and tidy. I wanted to be neat and tidy. My need for perfectionism as a coping method helped me to try to always try hard, but it also hurt me when I was unable to meet my self-imposed high standards. It could be even worse if I didn't meet someone else's high standards for me. This is still sometimes true, though I can get messy, and I like it when I allow a mess to exist around me without worry. It doesn't happen too often, but I can let a closet get messy. I also like it when I let my hair stay curly, not needing it to be perfectly blow-dried, which is something new for me only in the last couple of years. And I love it because I'm now allowing myself to feel more relaxed and not always on for how I think I should look or be for others. It really is a great feeling. I don't have to blow dry. I taught myself to draw. I was decent at it then. I haven't kept up with it, but I enjoyed the practice to keep trying to perfect my drawing technique. And I loved that I could create my own world, my own drawings. This increased my creativity, and I have used creative thinking throughout my life. This may seem odd, but rhythm meant a good deal for me. I liked the rhythm of my skates as they went over a crack at one end of our backyard patio. I had those four-wheeled skates back then, the ones where you use the key to tighten them on your shoes. That's a back-in-the-day memory, I'll tell you. So when I was going over the crack in the patio, it would sound like crack, 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 crack. It was like a mantra to me, and I did it over and over, loving that feeling and the sound of it. I liked the feeling of my canary yellow 10-speed bike and how I needed precise movement or the lack of movement to let go of the handlebars as I went down the hill of the road that ran alongside our house. Practice, 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 rhythm. I like the need for perfect strokes in water ballet so I wouldn't splash the water. This took a lot of repetition. Practice. So I liked repeated practice and rhythm. It was my mantra. It was soothing. I love to dance. I still do. I've talked about this a little bit. I dance just about a little every single day, even if it's just for a minute or two. So what does movement do for us? It can help heal our mind and our body by improving circulation, reducing inflammation, and releasing those spectacular endorphins I talked about earlier. AI Overview tells me what, again, I already know. Movement can also help with emotional healing, such as processing trauma. I haven't tried it, but I'm aware there is what is called dance or movement therapy, which is a type of creative arts therapy that focuses on the connection between movement and emotion. You might want to check that out. I began to exercise in my late teens. I became an avid runner. Here's the thing, the endorphin high helped me feel better, even if at the time I didn't realize how much I was helping myself. I still use exercise to relieve stress. I run, I walk, I swim, I bike, I hike, I kayak, and I use weights because exercise works incredibly well for me. But I make sure I'm not using it as a means to drive the belief that I need to be perfect. I write about this in my book because I'm well aware that I have this tendency. I worked with a psychotherapist in New York City for 17 years. I was in therapy with her for all of those years for several reasons that I write about in my book. Her name was Molly, and I felt safe with her. She got me through a lot. A lot. Over many years, she provided the only space where I felt safe to share about my childhood experiences. I could freely talk about Laszlo, who I wrote about, and who was on my last podcast. And I was able to face some pretty horrific events that happened in France because I had such a trusting relationship with her. She knew I liked to educate myself as much as possible to help me understand events in my life and the effects that they were having on me. So she suggested books I read, and I took several psychology courses, and I read a good deal of self-help books. So I educated myself as much as possible as a means to cope and to try to heal, because knowledge is power. One unhealthy coping method I've used at times in my adult life is alcohol as a means to self-soothe. It simply didn't work for me in overabundance, but does it ever really? I was never an alcoholic, but I definitely had moments when I overimbibed. I write in my book about a few of these moments that took place after my husband passed away just over 6 years ago now. This is hard for me to say this, to talk about this, but I'm going to, even though I'm not mentioning it specifically. There was one particular incident when a not-so-funny thing happened, and it was the last time I drank way too much. After this not-so-funny event, I had to decide to want to be here. Meaning to want to live. But I didn't just want to exist. I was doing that, just existing. Oxford Languages Dictionary defines exist in two ways. First, to have objective reality or being. Or, and this definition is how I believed, to live, especially under adverse conditions. I wanted to be happy. I didn't just want to exist. I was miserable. I was miserable in a way I'd never been miserable before. And if you've read my book or listened to my previous podcasts, that's saying a lot. I didn't want to hide my life so much anymore. I wanted to believe I could be authentic with people, that I could share experiences from my life and they would still like me, accept me, even want to know me. See, I hadn't believed I could share my life story with many. And the ones who did know, they died. Even Molly is gone. Only Laszlo was left. I felt strong talking in therapy all those years with Molly, but not with people outside of therapy because I didn't trust people with my feelings, with my story. If I'm honest and I'm trying to be, I didn't share near as much about myself with my husband, Mike, because I didn't want him to think he'd gotten stuck with a problem. Even though he often said to me, "My darling, I wish you could see you the way that I see you." He meant he thought I was pretty remarkable, but I often couldn't understand why. You can read my book to learn about that not-so-funny thing that happened that caused me to finally begin to try to snap out of my depressed state and figure out how to live authentically and to find purpose in my life. I tried to get where I could do EMDR therapy. EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a technique that helps one process traumatic memories and reduce symptoms of PTSD. The goal is to change how the memory is stored in the brain, and this reduces its emotional impact. Now, I know the therapist I used who specialized in EMDR therapy was very capable. However, I couldn't develop a trusting relationship with him, and this is a very important part of the therapy. I write about why I believe I couldn't develop the trusting relationship in my book. So EMDR treatment works well for many people. It just wasn't a good fit for me. Although I wasn't able to do EMDR therapy with the therapist I just mentioned, I am quite grateful that he educated me about the internal family systems model for healing our uninjured parts. I highly recommend you read the book Internal Family Systems Therapy by Richard C. Schwartz and Martha Sweezy to understand how this model for healing works. And I encourage you to seek counseling as you work with the IFS model. It can be a little intense. I discuss in detail in my book how I use this IFS therapy to do some wonderful healing of injured parts. So not long after the not-so-funny event that led me to want to heal more deeply, I had a physical issue. I won't go into that here because it's not that important. But after some testing that didn't provide the answers we needed, my general practitioner and I discussed how to best manage the concern. I mentioned I'd had the physical issue before in a different way and had successfully resolved the issue with acupuncture. She promptly referred me to an acupuncturist. So we all know that there are a lot of forms to fill out when we go for just about any kind of treatment today. Scarborough Family Chiropractic in Maine is no different. I think there was something like 6 or 8 pages I had to complete, including a section on my mental health. In my I am trying to be honest and not hold back new way of thinking, I completed the section, even though it was there solely for a physical issue. I checked off, yes, I was depressed. Yes, I'd had more than one trauma experience in my life. Yes, I was diagnosed with PTSD. Yes, I was not long widowed, etc., etc. And now I introduce Donald Charlson, an acupuncturist working at Scarborough Family Chiropractic in Maine. Don has several certifications that include a diploma of acupuncture, meaning he is certified by the National Certification Commission for Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine, and this is a considerable professional achievement to earn. He is also a specialist in oncology acupuncture, and the first licensed acupuncturist in Maine to obtain a subspecialization in oncology acupuncture, and he's a member of the Society of Integrative Oncology. Don also treats clients with PTSD and CPTSD. He's here today to talk about how acupuncture helps those of us with PTSD. Hi, Don, and welcome to my podcast.
Hello, Lauren. Thank you for having me today.
Don, can you explain to our listeners how acupuncture works?
Yes. Acupuncture has an effect on the balancing of neurotransmitters, serotonin, especially serotonin and dopamine. It also has an effect on the autonomic nervous system, helping to balance that out. Think of the fight or flight. What I find with people who have chronic or complex post-traumatic stress, it creates the space, allow them to move forward instead of feeling like they're spinning in circles or stuck. So yeah, acupuncture, both. That's in regards to mental problems in terms of its effect. So affecting cortisol, also lowers cortisol as well. Dopamine, neurotransmitters, has been shown to work very, very well. A good chunk of my practice is treating veterans and people with post-traumatic stress, and they respond very, very well.
Oh, thank you. So, Don, I came to see you in, I think, very late 2021 or early 2022 with a very specific physical issue. As I mentioned, I completed the required form, and I was honest about my mental state at that time. You talked to me a good deal about how I was feeling, and you then explained to me how acupuncture might help my PTSD symptoms. Could you explain why it's so important to understand a client's mental health, even though the client may be there solely for the purpose of a physical ailment?
Many times when someone is grappling with a chronic physical condition or something that is, has it responded to other forms of treatment in order to really achieve healing with their physical concern, it's also important to address any mental health concerns. Oftentimes, the pattern that is most often associated with whether it be post-traumatic stress or any other sort of mental health concern is the same pattern that you are treating the physical problem. And if I remember correctly, that was the case with yourself.
Don, you also said that it's recommended that I see a therapist in addition to receiving acupuncture treatment for PTSD, meaning for the mental health aspect of acupuncture treatment. Can you explain why this is important?
So acupuncture has an effect on neurotransmitters and also being able to regulate the autonomic nervous system, that fight syndrome that we often find ourselves in, especially when we're going through post-traumatic stress, whether it be flashbacks or triggering events. And what acupuncture does is, I talked about earlier, creating that space. So once that space is created, it's important to have the tools to be able to address what is going on. You were unique because you had those tools with you. And yes, at the time I did recommend that you continue some form of therapy because my concern was that without that those cognitive tools, at first I didn't realize you had the tools that you had. As the opportunities created themselves for you to address them, without those tools, you would not have gotten the same benefit. As I learned as we went along with treatment, you came with those tools and had a lot of experience and were able to utilize those tools, which certainly was to your benefit.
At that time, I'd had a pretty rough experience in therapy. And I said that I didn't believe I could see a therapist. You even recommended someone to me. And I went so far as to set up the appointment. And then I got a confirmation, like one of those texts that asked me to confirm 24 hours ahead. And I just couldn't do it because of the experience I'd had. So I canceled that appointment. But you were kind and you didn't turn me away. Why?
Because as we were talking, you had talked about your previous experiences and then talked about the things you'd learned along the way with those previous experiences. And so it became really clear to me really quickly that you had the tools that as you started progressing with the acupuncture that you could essentially provide your own form of self-therapy, as it were, something that many people aren't often able to do. So my hat goes off to you being able to utilize your previous experiences.
I appreciate you saying that because I, at the time, and I know this, and I know that you saw this when I first came to see you, I was a mess. So you recommended I see you, I think at that time, 3 times a week. Why did you believe it was necessary for me to receive treatment so often?
When you look at the acupuncture research, acupuncture is what is referred to as being dose-dependent, and then its results are exponential with increasing treatments. So the fact that it is dose-dependent is a fancy way of saying the more you have it, the better it works. And then the more you have it, the results that you actually get better faster with more frequent treatment. Even though I recognize that you had many of the tools to be able to help yourself, I wanted to get you to that point as quickly as I could. And that is why I recommended treatment at 3 times a week.
And I saw you pretty much 3 times a week. I think for months, but for those first few months, and I'm not sure if you were aware of this, but I cried every session while I was alone in the room. And it really was as though I was able to release my emotions, but in a different way while I was being needled. Maybe you can help our listeners understand why.
So while the needles are in, they quote-unquote work their magic, which is the release of beta endorphins, the effect on dopamine, serotonin. So what that looks like is being able to confront would be a strong word, but confront your emotions or have a catharsis that feels different while the needles are in as opposed to before you were treated. So what did it feel like when you were having a cathartic moment and then, in terms of just really struggling with your symptoms and crying in terms of, just where you're at versus having acupuncture on a regular basis and then starting to feel like you're in a different place, for lack of a better way of putting it. And then you, as a result of having that space created and then also being in a place where you can have a release or emotions that allows you to move forward as opposed to not going anywhere, or if you're going somewhere, it's in circles.
Staying stuck, running around in circles. So I think I was seeing you maybe 3 months, and my physical ailment was definitely getting better for sure, but it was taking a little time. My emotional state was definitely getting better. I even decided I would write my book. And this is something I didn't think I could do just a few months earlier, because I thought my painful life story would be just too much for me to tell. And I have to say, I truly believe acupuncture treatment changed my state of mind around telling my life story. Again, maybe you can explain how I could get to this point so quickly.
Acupuncture, regular acupuncture treatments allow people to see a version of themselves they didn't think existed. And I believe that's what happened with you. You found yourself in a place where you were doing better than you ever could have imagined, especially given those, short few months of treatment, frequent treatment, but when you look at the bigger picture, a short period of time.
Yeah, and I'd like to go back to something you said just a minute ago about, acupuncture allows you to confront the emotions, and you said maybe that's a strong word. That's exactly what it felt like. I was able to confront them, and at first, they could feel very scary, but I don't know how to explain it, but I was able to kind of face them, sit with them during the treatment, because sometimes, and I'm going to talk about this in a second, some things came up for me while I was being treated, but it just allowed everything. It's almost like the fear began to dissipate. It began to just gradually and slowly lessen for me. And when I left, after I had the experience in acupuncture, what happened for me was then if I confronted the thought that caused me fear or to feel emotional, it wasn't anywhere near as strong. And I thought that was amazing. So I began to write my book, and I wasn't in therapy. I didn't want to use you as a therapist because that wouldn't be fair. But when I saw you, you would ask me about my physical symptoms. We'd talk about that, and then you'd explain to me what we might work on that day and how. And then you would subtly ask me how I was feeling mentally. I might tell you I was working on something, maybe a tough section in my book, and you would ask me to describe the emotion I was feeling. Then you would needle me accordingly. A couple of times, I experienced what I'm calling flashback moments. I remember once, just after you began to needle me, and you often begin in the head, that I experienced that I was in New York City, where I had been stalked, and I discussed this ordeal in my book, and that I was fighting to keep my stalker from entering my home. I was terrified. I wanted to jump off the table, but of course I couldn't. My heart was racing, and I was sobbing. I'm not sure how often this happens, that a client might go into an emotional flashback state while being needled, but you remained calm. You asked me what I was seeing. You asked me what was happening for me, and you listened. I logically knew where I was, of course, but I was having an emotional or physical flashback to the memory of trying to keep my apartment door shut to remain safe. You then asked me to describe the room for you. I looked around and I told you the color of the walls and what was on them, and then I saw the door. And I'll never forget this. I realized that the doorknob was on the wrong side, because my doorknob in New York City was on the left side of the door, and the doorknob in the room where I was being treated is on the right side of the door. And my emotions kind of clicked and to begin to come back to knowing I was in a very safe environment. So using the sense of seeing to describe my surroundings helped me. In this case, I didn't need to go beyond the visual of that doorknob. You waited until I was calm. And as always, you provided me the emergency button, something you always do for your clients, and you left the room. My emotions calmed considerably. Don, can you explain how I might experience a flashback on the table and how, as I am fully aware, I was able to maneuver my way through the experience while needled so that now, if I think of it, it isn't anywhere near as frightening for me?
So acupuncture doesn't always consistently work immediately in, like, you know, it's not like I place one needle in and then you're in this magic place. For many people, it's a process. So as you talked about your experience, and I could tell that you, while physically with me, you clearly were not, I knew that getting the needles were important, but also needed to create that space without the needles first before I can get the needles in to create this space to help you. And I did that by engaging your visual senses, and hence the line of questions that you had talked about. And then once I could tell you were, all of you, or at least more of you was with me than not, I felt I could then go ahead and continue to place needles. And then, as you said, stayed until you were more calm.
I appreciate that. I'll never forget that moment and how so wonderful and compassionate you were. I think I kept apologizing, but you were very compassionate. Because of writing my book, I re-traumatized myself writing about childhood traumas and the experience in France. So my traumas mostly happened years ago. How important is it, and I hope I'm being clear with my question, to receive acupuncture treatment sooner than later after the trauma?
When people ask me how much treatment might they need in as a post-traumatic stress event, yes, ideally, they're able to receive treatment shortly after the event. However, in reality, that is rarely the case. I'll be honest, I've been licensed since 1998, so almost 25, 30 years. I don't think I've seen anyone any sooner than 5-10 years after their, I'm thinking like veterans that served multiple tours in Afghanistan. That was the most recent large scale deployment we've had. And you know, we're talking, 5-10 years for many of them. So I'm lucky to see someone 7 years out from their traumatic event, and many times it's much longer, as was your case.
Yeah.
And so hence the reason why the 3 times a week for several months, and really focusing on really distilling in terms of the predominant emotion, hence the reason why I would often ask, if you had to pick one emotion, what would it be?
Yeah, sometimes it was hard. Sometimes I had a few. Thank you for that. That was a great explanation. So let's say someone with PTSD or complex PTSD is listening to this podcast and they think acupuncture could really help them. What if they're afraid of needles? Is there a way to do the treatment without using needles?
Yes, there is. There is a non-needle technique. The instrument is called Apache. So it's basically, it looks like a big fat first grader pencil. On one end is a button that you push, and on the other end is a little spark. And so basically I will stimulate points So the process of picking channels and points is the exact same. I tend to use it so while it can be used with anyone regardless of age, I find children tend to respond really, really well because of the concerns around needles. And in fact, I'm treating a 10-year-old now with anxiety that's responded very, very well with it. And we haven't used any needles at all.
Oh, great. I'm glad I asked that question because I knew you were going to give me a good answer. So I have one last question for you. Does an acupuncturist need special training to treat someone with PTSD?
I would say a licensed acupuncturist has the prerequisite skill to treat and manage someone with post-traumatic stress. What's hard for people that are interested in having acupuncture, that there are a variety of professions that have been able to work in the use of an acupuncture needle with considerably less training and might not have the background in their formal education to work with people with post-traumatic stress in a way people would expect their licensed acupuncturists to be able to do so, like I did with you over time.
Don, thank you for joining me today. I can't say enough how grateful I am, first for having a physical ailment that wasn't life-threatening in any way but still needed treatment. I'm grateful for my internist referred me to you in particular. I'm grateful for the very thorough forms I had to complete in order to receive treatment. And I am, of course, grateful for your expertise. Also, for your considerable kindness and your ability to listen and understand. You provide such wonderful compassion, and I can't thank you enough for helping me to heal so much more deeply than I've been capable of healing before. And that's been a lot to heal.
Thank you, Lisa. It's been an honor and pleasure treating and helping them. You've done amazing, you know, between just how you've progressed and then writing the book. I mean, it was amazing the fact that you were able to sit down, put pen to paper, and share your experiences with people. I'm sure the people would be helped. In fact, I've got patients I've mentioned that, you know, are looking forward to reading your book and actually hearing this podcast. So thank you.
Well, that's great. I'm going to, so by the time this podcast comes out in a few weeks from now, my book will also be out, but I'm just going to share, and I know that the listeners can't see, but I just have to hold up so that you can see it, Don. The first copy of my book arrived last night. This is my copy that I review to make sure everything looks the way I want it to look. And once I approve this baby, my book will go into production. So I'm almost there. And of course, by the time the readers listen to this, my book will be out. And that's pretty exciting stuff. It's been a lot of work. And you've been there from the beginning of it. So thank you.
Thank you. I was glad to be able to play a small part.
You played a huge part. I know acupuncture treatment may not be the best fit for everyone trying to heal with PTSD or CPTSD, but neither was EMDR for me. Still, I tried it, and I still recommend it. The point is, there are so many treatments, and it's up to the individual which one feels best for you. For those of you in Maine who may wish to begin acupuncture treatment to help with symptoms of PTSD or complex PTSD, you may contact Donald Charlson at scarboroughacupuncture.com. As I've stated in prior podcasts, any website I mention here will also be posted on my website, flyingoverthehedge.com. If you're not living in Maine and you decide you wish to try acupuncture to help treat PTSD symptoms, I encourage you to do research in your area to find an acupuncturist trained in treating PTSD symptoms. If you're a veteran of war, you may inquire with the Veterans Administration about receiving acupuncture to help treat PTSD and physical pain symptoms. Please contact your VA provider and ask to see a licensed acupuncturist. So one last method of treatment for PTSD, and I'm going to mention this very briefly, is psilocybin therapy. I'm going to directly quote the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health, or the website is nccih.nih.gov. And again, this will be on my website. The direct quote is, research interest in the potential of psychedelic drugs to treat mental health conditions, including depression, anxiety, existential distress and serious mental illnesses, post-traumatic stress disorder, and addiction has been growing. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or the FDA, granted breakthrough therapy designation to psilocybin-assisted psychotherapy for both major depressive disorder in 2019 and treatment-resistant depression in 2018. The FDA may also grant this designation for treatments for serious or life-threatening conditions where preliminary evidence suggests the treatment may improve the condition substantially more than other available options. So about a year after I'd been in acupuncture therapy, maybe a little longer, I also did a session using psilocybin mushrooms with a medical professional present. And I can't point out enough, you should do these sessions in a controlled and safe environment with a medical and/or mental health professional present. I write in detail about the session in my book, including my conversation with a turtle, my mental confrontation with my captor, and I explain that for some reason I was inside a lot of things, including my mother's birth canal, and that happened a few times, and my dog's mouth. I even tickled the roof of her mouth. It was a glorious feeling of healing and connectivity for me. So I believe the psilocybin session was another treatment method that allowed me to heal more deeply. I must note, however, not everyone has a positive reaction. And so I say this again, it is very important to have a professional present with you. I discuss in my book, and I talked about it here today, how I use silly jokes and music as coping methods. I like to end my podcast with a little humor and a song that speaks to me. Whether you're ready for it or not, here's the joke for this podcast. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I say these. Why are frogs so happy? Because they eat whatever bugs them. No, I know it's silly. Don, at least you're laughing quietly. So that's the joke, and you just got to live with it. My song for the podcast is, it's by Sia, that's S-I-A, the artist Sia, and it's titled Courage to Change. The lyrics really speak to me, and I hope they speak to anyone who is trying to find the courage to change. Please know you are not alone in all of this. Join me next week when I will be discussing how I came to be a part of the remarkable team at the Freedom to Choose Project. I am a reader volunteer for incarcerated women and men in the California prison system, and my final episode promises loads of self-compassion, compassionate understanding, and a conversation with two people who are truly remarkable and uplifting. I can't wait for this one. Thank you. Thanks for listening to Flying Over the Hedge with your host, that's me, J. Lauren Sangster, author of the newly released book titled The Girl Who Flew Over the Honeysuckle Hedge, Her Lifelong Journey of Coping and Healing with CPTSD. Remember, I am not a mental health professional, but I am someone who has experienced a significant amount of trauma, who is discussing my experiences, the effects of those experiences, coping methods, and healing. If you or someone you know has experienced trauma and you are having difficulty coping, I encourage you to seek help with a mental health professional. My call to action is practice self-compassion. What does that mean? It means responding to yourself with understanding and kindness, especially when you make a mistake, and we all make mistakes. Again, for more information, including a page of websites I mentioned during my podcast, please visit flyingoverthehedge.com. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. Thank you.
Produced by AutoVita Studios. connect your voice to the world.